Thank you, Ross. I am John B., sitting in for George Norrie tonight. And I think part of the question has already been answered, which was, who are these people? Who are these elite? Are they Europeans? Is this group made up of multinationals and so forth? And then we hear the name Kissinger. Our guest tonight is Chaplain Lindsay Williams, pastor, preacher, chaplain, and extraordinary back channel to some of the information that I don't know how much of it we can use. I'm thinking maybe a really thick helmet, but we're going to get into all of that, and I want a nice long stretch, so we're going to go to the break early so that we can talk with Lindsay down toward the bottom of the hour and get some meat against these teeth. This is Coast to Coast AM. John Wells in for George Norrie with Chaplain Lindsay Williams. Well, let's talk about Kissinger. What happened with Kissinger and the deal that he pitched these guys about, we will not extract our own oil, we'll buy yours. What was the point of that whole thing, and how did that come about?
1977 through 1981, during the Carter administration, the greatest user of crude oil on the face of the earth was the United States of America. We consume more than anyone else. And Mr. Kissinger said to each of these oil-producing countries who now had the majors in America to produce their oil fields, that paid back for those oil fields, and he said, I'd like to cut you a deal. I had no way of knowing this except for these people to have told me, verify it for yourself, do your own research, I beg of you. And he said, I will cut you a deal. We will buy your oil. We will not produce our own oil fields. This is the reason that American oil production has stymied, even though they know that the Bakken oil field was there. They knew about the oil field under Colorado. They knew what was in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge in Alaska, but they could not produce them, and no president could allow it to be produced because of the deal cut back in those days. And Kissinger said, we will buy your oil. We will not produce from our own oil fields, and I have a request of you that you will take a certain portion, and I do not know what that portion was, but he said a certain percentage of the oil that we buy from you, you must turn around with that currency, which of course was the dollar, as sound as the dollar back in those days, and the dollar was the reserve currency of the world, and our T-bills were trusted as nothing else on the face of the earth, as good paper, that nothing could happen to it. And he said, you must take a certain portion of what we buy oil from you with and buy our Federal Reserve issues and our T-bills. It was a trap. John, it was a trap because somebody, they knew what was going to happen over the next decade. Somebody had to buy our national debt. And remember that the way that the national debt is monetized, or should I say bought, was the Federal Reserve, which is not an agency of the federal government any more than Federal Express is. Do not let the name Federal surprise you, or fool you. The Federal Reserve issued T-bills and securities, and these countries bought those securities. This, in turn, monetized the interest on our national debt, which now, of course, has grown to approximately $14 trillion. They knew it. This was their method of monetizing it, but it was to ultimately become a trap, which they knew would take place. Now, at the same time, there was another scenario going on in the world. That was, now you remember that President Bush, Daddy Bush, of many, many years ago, had been ambassador to China. China, prior to his being the ambassador from the United States of America to China, had been a closed society. The Great Wall of China literally separated it from the rest of the world. But there was cheap labor there, and Bush knew it. Bush opened up China. I was told by one of these elite in a conversation about 2 years ago, he said, Chaplain, don't pay any attention to the Middle East. Don't pay any attention to North and South Korea. He said, that is insignificant compared to China. I said, what do you mean? I'll give you his exact words. He said, Chaplain, China is the big one. Bush, Senior Daddy Bush, literally opened up China to the entire world. It was a part of the plan to move our industry abroad, to take it out of America, to dismantle this country, And today, by the way, let's take business Boeing or Caterpillar. They've moved these big factories to China. General Motors, we bailed them out, but they're selling more cars in China this year than they are in the United States of America. Chrysler, the same thing. These companies, in order to build plants in China, and this is what the average American doesn't understand. The real meaning of all of this is not necessarily to move our industry abroad as much as it is to get our patents. Whenever Boeing or Ford or Caterpillar move to China, China requires them to give them their patents to all of the products that they produce. And this is the real reason for the dismantling of America, is for this big China, which they intended to make the next great part of their new world order, was for China to get all of the patents and the knowledge of America. And when our companies move there, they must give them that. It is dastardly. Our Congress has literally betrayed us and allowed this to happen. They are going to have the patents to our war machines from Boeing, our aircraft, you name it. Oh, it's startling. Okay. I must go further. I can't stay on that too long. We won't cover all of this.
Now, let me ask you something before you go. Now, hold your thought, because I don't want to interrupt your train of thought here, but I do want to ask you something. What year was it that Kissinger made this deal?
Kissinger made this deal while he was Secretary of State between the years of 1977 and 81.
Well, I don't want to put you on the spot here, but I thought Cyrus Vance was in there from 77 to 80, and Muskie was in there from 80 to 81.
Okay. At what year, then, was Kissinger there?
Well, let me look in there. In any case,
during the years that Kissinger was Secretary of State is when he did this.
Okay. That works. That works. Yeah. You remember the deal in, I think it was the Clinton administration, where a couple of hard drives disappeared from, I can't remember if it was Sandia Labs or Los Alamos, one of them. And then after this massive search for these hard drives, and there was a Chinese operative that was involved in this, they found him behind a copy machine was the official word put out over the media. So yeah, this, one warlike and very tuned in individual mentioned recently that China wants the formulas and the recipes and the patents on everything, including Twinkies. They want they want the formula for even down to the Twinkies, so they can sell them back to us. My question would be, why hand off? What's your theory on why would we hand over all this stuff to China? I mean, what is the point?
They have everything to gain by this. Keep in mind that the elitists are international. America does not mean any more to them than any other country. Someone asked me on a program the other day, a show, they said, do the elite control China and Russia? I said, sure they do, just like they do America. The only difference is they do it with a little different methodology. In order for the new world order to be brought in, America must be brought down to a level playing field with all the rest of the world. And here is, let me go on, and you'll understand this as you see the progression of what they did. In 1970, the big oil field was discovered in Alaska. 1974, 5, and 6, the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline was produced. In 1976, the only place it's ever recorded on the face of this earth is in my book, Energy Non-Crisis, which now is out of print. And I watched the largest oil pool ever discovered on the face of the earth up until that point, which is in my book entitled, If Gull Island Doesn't Blow Your Mind, This Will. In 1980, my book, Energy Non-Crisis, came out, was printed, and the world knew that there was a major oil field there. At the time, I asked one of these elitists that I was with, I said, now, America needs this oil. We need cheaper gasoline. Why can't you give us oil from our own soil? I'll never forget his response. He said, Chaplain, we are not going to produce that oil from the Arctic Wildlife Refuge and from the Gull Island field that we've just discovered. He said, we've ordered that information from Gull Island classified. And he said, we will not produce that oil until we get it, the price of crude oil, to $150 to $200 a barrel. That staggered me, because I knew at the time that crude oil was $32 a barrel, and to take it to $150 to $200 a barrel was more than I could even comprehend. Now, there's a reason why this happened, because at the same time now, these foreign countries are buying our T-bills, monetizing our debt, keeping America from crashing any sooner than what they wanted it. There's a number of books that you could read on this, by the way. The Three Sisters was one written back in those days, and some others, that you'll find much of this explained in detail. Now, at the time, our oil was $32 a barrel. Now, I remember 1983, I had a call from one of these individuals one day, and he said, "Chaplain, the price of crude oil is going from $32 a barrel to $10 a barrel." I said, "You can't do that." He said, he laughed at me, and he said, "Chaplain, come on. You and our board meetings, you know that we control this. The Arabs have nothing to do with the price of a barrel of oil. We tell them what we're going to give them for it from New York to London every day." He said, "I'm telling you it's going to $10. It went to $9. I had said it a few months before it happened, and for the first time people thought that I'd become a prophet, and I said, "No, I'm just telling you what's happened." Now, 1983 through 2007, this is so significant. During those years, they were dismantling America. They were moving it abroad. They were taking our industry from here, putting it in China, building up China. And one day, one of these individuals used an expression to me. It would take a whole program just to go into this. He used an expression to me one day. He called it the devil's Messiah. And naturally, being a minister, my ears perked up immediately, and I said, "What do you mean by the devil's Messiah?" He went on to explain to me, this is not the Antichrist described in the Bible. It has nothing to do with it. He said, "This is the method whereby we had brought America to the place where it is." And I said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "You know, I was a chaplain up there. I'm a minister of the gospel." I said, "What do you mean, the devil's Messiah?" He said, "Chaplain, we had to remove the foundation stone of the God that America was built on before we could bring in our new world order." I was flabbergasted. We talked for the longest on the telephone about this. They moved everything abroad. They dismantled the religious base and foundation of America on which our founding fathers had based it on. Now, we come down to today, and I'm pushing this fast because I know time is limited tonight. 2012, let's come down to right where we are in 2011. What is taking place in the Middle East? There is a reason for what you saw in Egypt. Remember, and it's on record with many radio talk show hosts across America that I was on at the time, and I likewise produced some DVDs and CDs back in those days saying it before it happened. I said, there is going to be a crisis in the Middle East within 4 to 5 months. Exactly 4 months later, it broke out in Egypt. Now, here's what's going to happen. It's going to spread through the entire Middle East. The Muslim Brotherhood is being financed by the elite. Please, bear with me. I can only cover this briefly for lack of time. The Muslim Brotherhood is being supported by the elite. The Muslim Brotherhood will go from nation to nation to nation and cause the disruption of things over there. It is all according to a plan and a program whereby our oil, watch this carefully now, because it relates back to what happened in 1977. Our oil, they said, "We will not produce from American soil. We will buy oil from you." Now, if they disrupt our oil supply in the Middle East, they turn around, and at this point, crude oil is $200 a barrel. What's going to happen when a year from now, $200 a barrel crude oil, you're paying $6 to $7 a gallon at the gas pump? It is going to so drastically affect the economy of the United States of America that it will bring to pass what I was told is going to happen to the dollar. By the end of 2012, the dollar will be dead. What's going to happen to T-bills? Oh, my goodness, folks, this is so startling. What's going to happen to T-bills? What's going to happen to the Federal Reserve issues? All of these years, these OPEC oil-producing countries have believed that the American Federal Reserve issues were the most solid and sound things on the face of this earth, and that nothing could ever disturb them. And all of a sudden, out of a clear blue sky, when the dollar becomes worthless because so much trouble in the Middle East, we will have major problems in America financially. As a result, the dollar is going to become worthless, and so will the securities that these have held. It is a outright, and I'll use the word without any hesitation, it is a outright double cross. It was planned years ago. They knew it was going to be at the time they did it, and now what's going to happen? They will turn around and open the oil fields of America for the first time, because now the price of crude oil is $200 a barrel where they wanted it to go. And producing from our own soil, the long-range plan of the elite, and I can cover more details in this depending on how much time we have, but the long-range plan of the elite is bring on America's oil fields. I'll give you all four of them later on in the program. I'll give you the four oil fields that they plan to open up. And whenever they open them, provide from our own soil, because the Middle East is in so much turmoil. And at the same time, the securities that those countries have bought, including China, which holds $1 trillion of our T-bills, they will basically take loss on every bit of this, open America's own oil fields, and over a period of time, bring America back under the new world order. Keep in mind, the name of the game is control, and what their wishes are is to completely control everything. And a statement that was given to me recently, they said, when the dust settles, we will own every piece of mortgaged real estate in the United States of America, whether it be commercial or residential. And mark my words, at some point, if you have a mortgage on your house, you will be making your payment to the Federal Reserve, because they've bailed out the banks, they've bailed out Chrysler, they've bailed out General Motors. Every bit of this is a part. Then they will bring America back to a new height again over a period of many years, John.
That's interesting. Now, these oil fields here domestically that they're planning on tapping into, according to your information, would this be what they refer to as the strategic oil reserves? Is that what they're calling them now? We're going to tap into them later and start burning them in our automobiles? Or are these other reserves?
No. Now, there may be some there, but let me give you the ones that they plan to open. First of all, the other day I received a communique from one of these individuals, and at the top of the communique he said, "You better sit down." And here it was, basically. The U.S. Geological Service issued a report on April of 2008 that only the scientists and a few oil men even knew there was a possibility of. It was a revised report that had been updated since 1995 on how much oil was in the area of the western two-thirds of North Dakota, western South Dakota, and extreme eastern Montana. And it went on to say that the Bakken is the largest domestic oil discovery since Alaska's Prudhoe Bay, and has the potential of eliminating all of America's independence on foreign oil. The Energy Information Administration estimated that 503 billion barrels of recoverable, and may I tell you what kind it is? It is light sweet crude. Even at $107 a barrel, which that won't be what it is, it'll be $200 a barrel, we're looking at a resource base, only at $107 a barrel, of $5.3 trillion. At $200 a barrel, the entire national debt could be paid off. Now,
excellent. Tell you what, let me ask you to hold it right there. Can you hold your thought? Because I want to pick it up. Our guest tonight is Lindsey Williams, Chaplain Lindsey Williams. Some very interesting insights and a clarification coming up on Henry Kissinger and his position in various administrations. When you put out this kind of information, you have to be very careful, because the least little flaw it's the apple that can wreck the barrel. Wells in for Nori. This is Coast to Coast AM. Yes, John B. Wells in for George Nori tonight. And I just want to take a minute to clarify something, because there are a lot of pretty smart people out there that listen to the show, and I'm not patronizing you either. And let me just go on record. This statement is being beamed out all over the place. All from the satellite into space, where the decibels just waft through in tiny little flying saucers. Henry Kissinger 1973-74 was Richard Nixon's Secretary of State, and that would have been exactly the time that actually I spoke with Lindsay a little earlier today just to kind of get a grip on who he was and who I was. So before we impugn the man over a detail like that, I just wanted to bring that to your attention. But here's the other part that's rather interesting, and I'm sure many of you know this already, and that is that Henry Kissinger is regular at the invitation-only Bilderberger group, and he has been involved in so many things over the years that it doesn't surprise me that he has each of his eight fingers and two thumbs plugged into, I don't know, a hole in a dike or somebody's bank account somewhere, or maybe more than that. We're going to finish our discussion here this hour and, in fact, take a few of your calls. They are spread out from Ventura, California, clean up to CIA land up at Alexandria, Virginia. So please stand by. It should be a borderline hoot for the next few minutes and beyond. And then for the final 2 hours of the show, we'll be taking your calls. So start thinking about what you would like to talk about. Hopefully it will be enlightening, as it usually is on Coast to Coast AM. John B. in for George Norrie tonight. We're talking with Chaplain Lindsay Williams, and these 2 hours are going by faster than anything that I've ever experienced, which I certainly couldn't mention over the air. Where does Iran fit into all of this? And tell our audience that little tidbit about the countries that decided not to join OPEC, and that little tidbit about preparation for the future via our Homeland Security Secretary, if you will.
John, first of all, I would like to thank your listening audience for their astuteness. I have put down the dates of 1973 through 74 for Mr. Kissinger. The statement that was made to me by one of the elite one day was that when Mr. Kissinger was Secretary of State, he went abroad and did this. I stand corrected. And I want to thank your listening audience for their astuteness, and I will use the proper dates. We weren't too far off, but we were about 3 years off. So it was my lack of research there. The statement was correct. During Mr. Kissinger's time there, he did this. But in my research, I came up with the wrong dates. So
understood and appreciated. Understood and appreciated, and that's one thing we can count from our listeners is that they've definitely got our backs, and if we make a mistake, they'll point it out to us, however small it might be. But it was in the right groove chronologically. It's right in there. I don't think it detracted at all from what you're trying to say. But back to OPEC, what happened with Iran and Iraq not joining? What's up with that?
Well, there were two countries that would not sign Mr. Henry Kissinger's agreement. Number one was Iraq. Saddam, he said, no way. Later, he threatened Bush Sr. To have him killed. And you know what happened as a result of that. Bush Sr. started the Iraqi problem, and his son had to finish it. As far as Iran is concerned, the Shah was deposed. Iran has had problems with America ever since. And Iran, of course, at this point, is always looked at as the rogue nation of that whole part of the world. You know, we have many nations in the world who have capabilities of atomic weapons. Iran's not the only one. Here we've got one of the nations of Korea. We've got many, many other nations. Why is it that they always pick on Iran? Well, there's definitely a reason. Iran would not sign that agreement back in those days. And, of course, Iran now is providing crude oil to China, along with Russia. Every bit of this fits in so perfectly into what they did. These people start wars, they end wars. What they do, they have the human life means nothing to them. It's just another way of accomplishing what they want. In the name of the game is control. Now, let's go back for a moment to the three or the four oil fields that I've been told that they plan to open up.
Yes.
Number one is the Stanberry report of April the 20th, 2006. Go back and look this one up. And in that report, they stated that hidden 1,000 feet beneath the surface of the Rocky Mountains lies the largest untapped oil reserve in the world. It is more than 2 trillion barrels. And on August the 8th of 2005, President Bush even mentioned this. But yet none of that oil has ever been released, and it has not been brought about. Anybody that has any possibility of getting in the oil drilling business, get in there. You're going to make a fortune. Because when the Middle East problems continue to grow greater and greater, and America's oil fields are produced, the people who are in the oil business are going to be in the right place. So if I can make any word of help to you, get in the oil business at this time. Now, in this Stanberry report, 8 times more oil than in Saudi Arabia, 18 times more oil than Iraq, 21 times more oil than Kuwait, 22 times more oil than Iran, 500 times more oil than Yemen, and they can produce this at a very reasonable cost. And I understand somewhere around the neighborhood of, and I'm trying to find my figures here right quick, somewhere around the level of $16 per barrel, they estimate they can produce this oil. But at that point, they'll be getting $200 for it. That means that we could, if Washington and the elite and the powers that be were honest with the American people, we could bring back the great American dream alone with the oil that they know are in these fields. We could have gasoline at 60 cents a gallon.
There needs
to be something started to do this. Now, there'll be 2 other oil fields. One will be the Arctic Wildlife Refuge of Alaska,
right,
and then the Gull Island field, which is mentioned in my book, The Energy Non-Crisis. 4 oil fields that they can open up, and they know it's there.
Who's the better friend, potentially, or maybe even now, although not necessarily visibly? Would that be Russia or China? Or either?
Russia or China, what now? Speak your question again.
Who's the better friend to us? Of the two, who is the least threatening, the Russians or the Chinese?
Well, the least threatening would be Russia, even though I do not agree with communism in any shape, form, or fashion. China is probably the greatest threat that we have. They have our patents. They have our industry. We would literally be crippled in a short period of time if China decided they wanted to. I feel that China, from what I've been told by these people, I feel that China probably will raise the price of their yen at some point. And at that point, it will literally devastate the American dollar.
And what happens? How will they react if these T-bills of ours crash?
It's going to be horrifying.
Okay. There's a good word.
And I don't think many of them even realize how much double-crossed they have been. But when they find out, it's frightening.
What can we do about this individually to, other than, you mentioned, put some gold and silver together? What else should be done by the individual to sort of insulate themselves as best they can against what's coming?
I think probably, you know, there's many things of advice that I could give. And in my DVDs and CDs, I mentioned 12 things that I think every American must do immediately. I'd like to give one of these. There was a very prominent Hispanic political activist in the Phoenix area, a very devout Christian lady. When Janet Napolitano was given the job as the head of Homeland Security, she had been a very close friend of this individual when Janet Napolitano was the governor of the state of Arizona. And Janet Napolitano asked her if she would come to Washington and be the liaison between the Hispanic communities of America. Now, you can find this for yourself. You can go and research this for yourself and even find out her name, even though I'm not free to give it to you over the air tonight. And she was asked to be the liaison and was promised $170,000 a year. She filled out all the paperwork, was approved, and went to Washington, met with the president and with Janet Napolitano. And at the time, she was told by both the president and Janet, there are a few things that you must do, And she said, the reason I'm mentioning this to you is because Janet knew she was a very devout Christian. She said, you positively must agree with the president on every issue. You can never disagree with him if you take the job. Secondly, you positively can never mention homosexuality, lesbianism, and you cannot talk about abortion. Well, this lady said, I can't do this. She said, I'm a Christian. I must stand on my morals and principles. She said, I'm going to have to turn the job down. And she did. She turned down a $170,000 a year job. A few weeks ago, now that was a number of months ago, a few weeks ago, this individual was back in Washington again. Janet Napolitano found out somehow that she was there. She was there to raise some money for one of her Hispanic groups here in Arizona. And Janet Napolitano called her on the phone and said, I'd like to have lunch with you. They did, privately. And Janet said, in the course of their conversation, she said, I have told very few friends of mine this, but she said, I'm asking you, please, I consider you to be a friend, even though we don't agree on certain things. She said, I want you to go back to Phoenix, Arizona, and immediately get 6 months of food and water in your house. And this individual said, Janet, why are you saying this? She said, I can't tell you. She said, take my word for it. You know me. I'm telling you because I have a reason. Go back to Phoenix and immediately get 6 months' supply of food and water in your house for your family.
6 months. Gotcha. Do you feel like taking some calls? You know what? I'd love to. I'm a notorious format breaker back from the old days. In fact, I break formats on a variety of levels, but whenever possible. Always annoy the establishment. That's me. I wish we could keep you for another hour, but I don't know if you can do that or not.
I'll be more than happy to be available. I consider it a privilege to be on Coast to Coast AM.
Well, why don't you just hang around for a little bit, and why don't we take some calls? You feel like that? Be prepared.
I'd love to take some calls.
We've got a bunch of people, all kinds of, it's an unfortunate expression, but it's so good. We have some very intelligent people who are quite jacked up about this, as am I. Why don't we talk to Dave in Portland? He's west of the Rockies. Come into the Global Living Room and talk with the chaplain and me.
Hey, John. Hi, Lindsay. Great show today.
Excellent. Welcome. What's on your mind?
Well, you just answered one of the questions I was curious about. What can we do? And that's a good point to do. But my other question was, what do these elite think about the Mayan prophecy of 2012 and things like the New Testament? Being a pastor and myself a Christian, wondering about what they think. And I'll take my answer off the air.
That's good, Dave. Thanks very much. Yeah, what about that, chaplain? I normally don't put a lot of stock into the writings of heathen groups that suddenly disappear and leave mysterious calendars behind that abruptly end. But what's your take on all of that? Is it coincidental, or you think it's there's any biblical crossover?
The elitists definitely have a timeline. Their timeline is the end of 2012. I do not connect this with the Mayan calendar. I do not necessarily connect it with Scripture, even though there may be a connection. And I've been a minister of the gospel for 50 years, and I do know that the Bible says that certain things are going to take place, but I cannot necessarily reconcile all of the things that they've told me with the Scriptures, because much of it revolves around the United States of America and a monetary system, which really is minor compared to the disasters that are talked about in the book of Revelation. But I do know this. The elite positively have a timeline which they plan to bring to pass by the end of 2012.
Excellent. Why don't we talk with Marilyn in Houston? She's on the wild card line. Would you like to speak to the chaplain? Are you still there?
Yes. Hello.
Thanks for holding on.
Thank you so much for having this show. Chaplain, there is a power of intention. There's also, on the spiritual side, a collective spiritual consciousness. Is there any way that we can collectively pray that these godless individuals will somehow find the inside of themselves to know that this is totally wrong? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Thanks, Marilyn. Thanks for calling. What do you think about that, Chaplain?
We positively must. What Marilyn has just said, we must do. If we don't, our children and our grandchildren and our great-great-grandchildren are going to be slaves to the New World Order and to
Is that the ultimate goal, then, is slavery? Is that the ultimate high for these people, if you will? Indulge me that unfortunate expression.
The name of the game is control. I could put it that way. It would be in one sentence better than anything else I could say.
Sounds like slavery to me.
The next thing to it, and they have the ability to do it. They can do it, and barring divine intervention, they will. But they can't. We cannot let them. We must do just what Marilyn said and take both spiritual action, and I do not believe in physical action any more than what was done in November. I think something was begun in November, and I hope it'll be continued. And I hope that those who went to Washington will not do what the other politicians have done. Why is it that a president can go in as a millionaire and come out as a billionaire on the salary that a president makes?
The same way that you get a metric ton of heroin through an airport when you can't get your fingernail clippers through it. I would say an inside track somewhere. Why don't we bring in East of the Rockies, Michael in Alexandria. Are you still there, Michael?
Yes, sir. I surely am. Good evening, Pastor and Mr. Wells. I'm talking to people all around the world right now. I sat at the dinner table with my family, with a lot of the people from the Trilateral Commission and the Illuminati, for instance, the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers and such. I know that they are satanic and demonic people that like the people that the pastor is talking about that are godlessness. Their hearts are gone. Their soul is gone. They have no soul. They have no spirit. We have to rise up. People have to rise up and stop all this immediately. I don't know what we can do other than that. And God bless you all for being on the air.
I think people would do well to remember. Thank you very much for calling, Michael. I think people would do well to remember that if you embrace the concept of good and evil, then you must know that evil does not create anything. Evil only perverts, twists, or distorts something that has already been created. And in the end, it does not win, but it causes a lot of misery in the meantime. We're coming up on a hard break here pretty quick. So, Tom and Ventura, if you can come in here real quick before they chop us off, because they will. Come on into the global living room, if you will.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm a 32nd degree prince of the royal secret mason. I'm also a son of Illuminati, as unbelievable as that may be to you. I've had a falling out with one of them, and thank God you don't know my last name. I've had my life threatened. I've been a victim of predatory gang stalking as a result of that and discreditation. I was threatened with mental institution, jail, if I go against him. Anyway, the foundation of the house is bad. The rest of the house can't stand. The Illuminati exists. They're in Skull and Bones. They're in the CIA. The CIA's in bed with the mafia. Everybody that's been in Skull and Bones is Illuminati. Everybody that goes to Bilderbergers is Illuminati. And this country, the foundation is bad. The rest of the house cannot stand. Your guest is...
Hang on, Tom. Hang on. I want to keep you until after the break, so don't hang up. We're talking with Chaplain Lindsey Williams on Coast to Coast AM, and he's going to stay for another hour. This is going to get good. Stay with us, please. Wells in for Nori.